Good morning. It's good to see you. We're so glad that you're here this morning. Do hope you'll join us tonight. That is going to be a great time of worship and celebration. Great time with the kids, great time for all of us. So we hope you'll join us for our candlelight service and the program that the kids put on. I want to make you aware of something before we jump into the text this morning. Catherine Davis has served as our office administrator for 4.5 years, has done a marvelous job. Many of you know, in biblical parlance, she is great with child right now. And she is due at the end of January, and after the baby comes, she's going to be stepping down and stay with the baby. And so we're grateful for everything she's done. We're going to recognize that a little more on Wednesday, January 9th, the first Wednesday back of our Wednesday intensives, have a meal and a time of appreciation, recognition of everything that Catherine's done. We love Catherine. We love Kevin and Callie, and they may have already slipped out for the kids program. Okay, right over here. Callie's gone. We love this family, and we'll have a chance to tell them and give them a little something on the 9th, but I want to ask you to begin praying for us as we look to fill that spot and as we're exploring those possibilities, and pray for the Davises as they are anticipating exciting time ahead, and we are grateful and appreciative. We'll do it again, but let's show our appreciation right now, if you would. If you have your Bible, open up to Matthew chapter 2. We are going to pick up where our praise team left off from the passages that they read during the service. In verse 12, "And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, the Magi returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. 'Get up,' he said, 'take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you. So Herod is going, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him.' So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I called my son.' When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. 'A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are no more.'" We don't always think about it, and we don't always talk about it, but Christmas is risky. Christmas is risky. Now, to get our minds thinking along those lines, I decided to put together a top 10 list of risks of Christmas. This is my own list. There's nothing scientific about it, and in no particular order. But here's my top 10 risks of Christmas. Number one, there is the risk that grandma will get run over by a reindeer. Now, you may think that's weird, but I hear about that sort of thing on the radio all the time this time of year. Likewise, there is the risk that someone will see mommy kissing Santa Claus, and no one really wants to see that. True story, 1952, when this song first came out, the Archdiocese of the Catholic Church in Boston condemned the song because he thought it was too risque. Until the 13-year-old boy who originally sang the song explained that it was just his dad in disguise, and then everything was okay. Number three, there is the risk of trying to get into those impenetrable Fort Knox-style plastic clamshell containers that toys come in and batteries come in. This is true. Every year, 6,000 people or more in the U.S. visit the ER with wounds of trying to get in, bite, stab, slice their way inside of that plastic. There is risk of stepping through the ceiling, retrieving Christmas gear from the attic. There's all kinds of risk to your heart, shopping stress, family stress, party overload stress, all the overeating that goes on from food. There are all kinds of risks involving gifts. There's a risk that someone will get you a gift and you realize you didn't get them a gift. There's a risk that you will buy a gift, an article of clothing, but you will get the wrong size, and they will take great offense at the size that you purchased for them. There is the risk that you will buy something and they don't like the gift that you give. There is the risk that someone will buy something for you that you don't like, but you have to act like you like what you do not like and try to be convincing in doing it. There is the risk, increased risk of fire, from Christmas trees that aren't watered properly, from deep frying turkeys when you don't follow the directions, from overloading outlets, Clark Griswold style. And speaking of the Griswolds, there's risk of falling off of ladders. More than 5,000 people are injured every year putting up Christmas lights. Here's someone's display. This is a Griswold-inspired display that you can see behind me. That is a mannequin, although if you have time, Google a story about the guy who thought it was real and tried to rescue him. I don't have time to show you the video, but it was captured on the home security video. There's definite risk to your budget as advertisers are appealing to you with all these steals and deals. And if you really love someone, you go over the top and spend more than you have. There is a commercial right now, a GMC commercial, in which a husband surprises his wife because he brought two brand new, really expensive cars. Maybe you've seen this commercial if you still see commercials these days. But they walk outside. It's one for him and one for her. And I decided just for fun to look up how much these cars cost. Combined, the base model, and they never show the base model in the commercials, but the base model combined is $105,000. Good for them, by the way. Merry Christmas. I'm happy for them. But if most of us in here bought two brand new cars at $105,000 for Christmas, it would sound something like this: surprise, I've got two new cars. Which one do you want to live in? Because we can't afford the mortgage anymore. And I'll end with this one. There is all kinds of risk of food poisoning. You're welcome that I gave you that one. In fact, one article I read warned that since eggnog traditionally has raw eggs in it, you need to watch out for salmonella. Now, if you asked me, I love a drink with as much raw egg in it as possible. Am I right? The yolkier, the better. If you want to know where my concern is there, it's in the nog, not the egg, because I'm not even sure what nog is. And so if you can clue me in as to what the nog is in the eggnog, let me know. That's where my suspicions lie. Okay, we could go on, and a few of those were serious, and most of those were silly. But the point is, from the very beginning, if you read the story, and not just the pretty parts, and not just the parts that show up in kids' programs this time of year. If you read the Christmas story, you can't help but see that Christmas, the coming of Christ, has been risky from the very beginning. It's just that we don't always read the full story. So a lot of times when we have our nativity scenes, we mash up Luke's gospel and Matthew's gospel, and they convey things very differently. And so in our scene, we've got everyone together in one scene. We've got shepherds on one side of the nativity scene, and we've got this mysterious, gift-bearing, wise men, magi, astrologers, whatever they are, because we're not quite sure, from wherever they are, some mysterious place in the east, and they're there. And we have a petting zoo breaking out all around us. And we've got angels floating in the air somewhere around, and they're singing. And we've got a haloed Joseph and Mary. And in the middle of it all is the sweet baby Jesus. When we're reading from Matthew's gospel, we usually like to stop where I had the praise team stop, around 2:11 in Matthew. Because we end with gold and frankincense and myrrh. That way we get to end on a high note. We stop before children start reading during the Christmas program about murderous death threats from a desperate king. And we want to sing about the arrival of hope as a new kind of king comes into the world, but at least, as far as I can remember, there's not a lot of songs about a wrathful, jealous king trying to wipe out any potential competition. We focus on the grandeur of the guests from a faraway land, and they arrive to worship and bring gifts to Jesus. We don't focus nearly as much on how Jesus and his family have to become refugees to a faraway land themselves. In Egypt, a great little allusion to Jesus as a new Moses. And one of our Christmas songs is so uncomfortable with the idea of Jesus being fully human that we sing that Jesus is the one baby in history that never sings or never cries. But you can be sure that Jesus at some point cried. He was a baby after all. But you keep reading, and after Herod gives an order for the mass murder of all boys under two in Bethlehem and the surrounding region, another Moses allusion, Matthew tells us that the words of the prophet Jeremiah are tragically fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. I've never been to a Christmas program that depicts that part of the story. Have you? Okay, kids, who wants to be an angel? Great. Do we have a Mary? Do we have a little Mary? Okay, that's wonderful. All right, who wants to be Rachel weeping for the death of all those innocent babies? Little Susie, you cry a lot. I think you would do really good at this part. You take that one. We don't cover that, but Christmas has always been risky. For God to enter the world as a helpless human baby has risk. For the immortal one to become mortal has risk. To enter the world into a poor family and a manual labor father and a mother who has a suspicious birth story to those around, from a nowhere town, as a part of a small, occupied people, that has risk. To come as a Jewish Messiah, proclaiming good news for everyone, Jew and Gentile equally, that has risk. To hang out with and befriend the religious and social outcasts, that has risk. To arrive as a new kind of king, proclaiming a new kind of kingdom, when there are already kings and kingdoms that very much like their power and authority, And we'll do whatever it takes to hold on to it. That has risk. There is no way to come in the name of world-changing love and not take a risk. There is no way to enter our world, a world with so much violence, a world with so much sin and struggle, and not take a risk. We've talked for several months now about recapturing the essence of Christian hospitality, opening our hearts and opening our homes and opening our hands and opening our calendars and opening our wallets to people in need, to people who are different, to people who are outsiders, to people who are other. And there is no way to do Christian hospitality, to extend ourselves and open ourselves to love without risks. Love, by its nature, is risky. I like this quote from C.S. Lewis in his book, The Four Loves. He writes, "To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even to an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. The only place outside of heaven where you can be perfectly safe from all the dangers of love is hell." To commit to hospitable love is risky. You don't have to be reckless, but a riskless love is no love at all. Jesus constantly warns that sometimes we will suffer and struggle in the path of love, in the name of love. Hospitable love means risking being rejected. It means putting ourselves out there and risking looking ridiculous. It means getting outside of our comfort zone and being willing to participate in things and join people in things that aren't exactly what we prefer, but we do it for their sake, not just for our sake. Hospitable love means risking being taken advantage of or being underappreciated or underrecognized, risking that another won't thank you properly. You won't get the respect that you deserve. They won't return love with love. They won't automatically change their ways because you acted in love on their behalf. When we give of our love, of our time, of our money, of our energy, there's a part of us that likes to think that we can control the outcome if we just hold on to enough control of the way that we give. And I totally understand that impulse. But love gives without any guarantees. That's what love does. Do you remember the story when Jesus heals 10 people with leprosy? One person out of the 10 comes back and thanks Jesus, right? And Jesus makes a big deal of it. So let me ask you, what happened to the other 9 that didn't come back and give Jesus thanks? Did he smite them again with leprosy? No. How many were healed? 10 went away healed, even though one only came back to thank. Because that's what love does. Jesus feeds 5,000 plus hungry people in a remote region. But he doesn't have them fill out a questionnaire before he feeds them to see who's really worthy of the food and who's not worthy of the food. There are no guarantees when he feeds them. Just grace that is dished out to the multitude. On the cross, Jesus prayed, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." So let me ask you, did all of those on the receiving end of that prayer immediately have an epiphany like, boy, we could not be more wrong about this guy? We got to turn things around. Well, we know the story, and the answer to that is no, but Jesus forgave anyway. He forgave not because of how others would respond. He forgave because of who he is. And Jesus is love. He is love incarnate. And love in the flesh is risky love, whether we receive him or not. One of my favorite and least favorite stories comes from a preacher named William Willimon, who preached at Duke Chapel for a long time. One Sunday, he was coming out of church after services, and he was getting ready to leave when he saw a man from a distance coming toward him carrying a bag, and the man looked dirty and disheveled, and he could tell it was a man who was coming to receive help from him. It was just some traveler on his way. They happened to be close enough where they got a lot of these folks who would come by, and it had already been a long day for Willimon, and he was going to have to come back up for a meeting, and he was exhausted, and he didn't have energy, and he didn't have time for it, and he sees the guy coming. So before the guy even gets there, he knows the request the guy is going to give because he's heard it hundreds of times. The stories are different, but the ask is similar. Can you help me on my journey? Can you help me on my way? So before the guy gets there, he pulls his wallet out and he starts pulling out money. He's just ready. And all he has is a 10 and a 5. He's got 15 bucks. That's all he has. And the guy walks up and he's ready. And Willimon says, "What can I do for you?" The guy says, I was wondering if you might be able to help a fellow on his way south. You see, I'm headed down." He said, Okay, let me stop you. I'm in a hurry. I gotta go. This is all I've got. I got 15 bucks. I'm happy to help you. God bless you on your journey. Here you go." And he sends him on. And the guy takes the money and he looks at it. And he looks at Willimon. And then without a word, he just turns around and starts walking away. Well, Mom was like, "Okay." And about 15 feet away, the guy stops and he turns back around and he looks at Willimon and he says, I guess you think I'm supposed to thank you, to be grateful." And Willimon says, "Well, now that you mention it, a little gratitude wouldn't hurt." And the guy says, "Well, I'm not going to thank you. You want to know why?" Willimon says, "Why?" And he says, "Because you're a Christian. And you don't help me because you want to. You help me because he tells you to help me." And then with that, he just turns around and walks away. And Willimon stands there and he says he is stunned. And he's fired up. He is angry and he is annoyed. The nerve of that man, the expectation of that man. And he says it was only when he was on his way home that it hit him. The attitude was all wrong for the guy. The actions were all wrong for the guy. But the theology was spot on. He says he was absolutely right. I told you at the beginning, I love and I hate that story at the same time. Here's my prediction. My prediction is some of you at least are going to go through the rest of that the day, and that story is going to bother you to no end. And the reason I predict that is because that story bothers me to no end. And as you think about it, you're probably going to say something like, yeah, I just don't know. He may have said, that's ultimately right, but I don't know. I'm not sure that is ultimately right. And I'll tell you, I still struggle. There's parts of me that's like, oh, that can't be right, can it? That can't be right. I don't know. But here's what I do know. You can't really love without taking risks. Risks that it won't be received properly. Risks that there won't be proper gratitude and recognition. Risks that love goes out and there's no sort of adjustment to life that follows. And here's what I also know. Even when we are faithless, Christ remains faithful. While we were dead in our sin and could do nothing, Christ came to offer life. I also know that I don't always show proper respect. I don't always give proper thanks. I don't always make the kinds of changes that Christ's love should evoke in me. But Jesus loves anyway. Jesus loves always. And it is a risky love, because that's who He is.